Because there's arsenic in the water. And just because there's mercury in the...
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The war in Iraq has provided doctors with something they don't normally see. A huge number of young, healthy Americans with devastating injuries. For every soldier killed in combat, many more are injured, losing an arm, leg, or multiple limbs. At Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C., doctors have fit more than 100 soldiers with technologically sophisticated artificial limbs, some costing as much as $150,000. Congress is expected to approve $10 million for construction of a new amputee care center at Walter Reed Hospital.
The success of the United Auto Workers when it comes to unionizing Japanese car factories in America has been less than stellar, but hopefully with a nudge from their counterparts in Japan, more progress can be made. The president of Japan's largest auto workers union says he's recently begun pressuring Japan's largest automakers, including Nissan and Toyota, to lessen their resistance to union organizing drives at U.S. factories. The UAW will still fight an uphill battle at many plants, though, as most are located in southern states, where so-called right-to-work laws make it more difficult to organize a union workplace.
Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry endorsed a $1.85 minimum wage hike on Friday, saying that it would significantly fatten American workers' paychecks. The lowest wage for U.S. workers hasn't risen for 7 years, since it became $5.15 per hour in 1997. Kerry told invited attendees at Northern Virginia Community College raising the minimum wage would give 7.4 million people who make less than $7 an hour in the United States enough extra money to buy 10 months' worth of groceries.
The results of a preliminary investigation by the Acting Inspector General of the U.S. Treasury accuse IBM of manipulating government data in a policy debate over pension. IBM lobbyists allegedly circulated a list of talking points against legislation that would have prevented companies from shortchanging long-term employees if they changed their pensions from a defined benefit to a cash balance plan. The legislation failed. Officially, the Treasury Department took no position on the bill, yet there's evidence Treasury's top lawyers may have worked with IBM assisting with its lobbying efforts. A final report is expected in August. No criminal charges have yet been filed.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. America's race gap extends from birth through old age. Researchers at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation looked at 14,000 nursing homes in the United States that individually accept 85% of their residents from Medicare and found a wide racial disparity in the quality of their care. Compared to whites, African Americans are more than four times as likely to be placed in homes that are short-staffed and run down. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
It's always good to get reassurances from high government officials on issues of great concern to the people. Take the nagging issue of U.S. corporations offshoring hundreds of thousands of well-paying high-tech jobs out of our country, the very jobs we were told would be our people's ticket into the middle class. But now, the CEOs of Dell, Microsoft, IBM, and the rest are shipping these engineering and programming jobs off to India, Russia, and other locales where they can pay a third or a fourth or even a tenth of the middle-class pay scale in the U.S. Hey, they say, America's a great place, but we're going to go where we can fatten our bottom lines. This self-serving betrayal of America's middle class has, to put it nicely, annoyed many, many Americans. This is where Colin Powell steps in. Bush's Secretary of State recently sought to reassure the people on this issue of offshoring. Unfortunately, the people he reassured were in India. On a recent trip there, he promised that the Bushites would do nothing to stop the outsourcing of U.S. high-tech jobs to India and, indeed, would oppose all congressional efforts to stop it. He even posed as an economic philosopher, declaring that, quote, outsourcing is a natural effect of the global economic system, adding adamantly that you're not going to eliminate outsourcing. Well, we're certainly not going to eliminate it if our government won't fight for our people. Oh, but Powell said, while these kinds of dislocations will take place, the Bushites plan to train the American people for new jobs. What new jobs exactly? He didn't say. He didn't have a clue. But Bush's Labor Department knows. It lists 30 job categories that will have the greatest growth between now and 2010. Number one, fast food workers. Two-thirds of their growth jobs pay less than $20,000 a year. This is Jim Hightower saying, forget high tech. Colin Powell envisions you in a hairnet.
It's difficult enough to work your way through this jungle called life every day without having to carry an 800-pound gorilla of high-interest student loans around with you. So just do what over 300,000 people have already done and call College Loan Corporation at 1-800-2-COLLEGE. College Loan Corporation will gladly give you the advice you need while helping you look into interest rates as low as 2.63%, the lowest federal rates in 40 years. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's the stick it where it hurts to feel well patch. Works in a hurry to feel well patch. Lasts a long time to feel well. Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Is pain keeping you from feeling well? Try the immediate, long-lasting pain relief of well patch. Well patch comes in a full line of pain-relieving patches that soothes your specific pain. For backache, arthritis, muscle pain, or stiff neck, put on a well patch.
Well patch, it brings you back to well patch.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Well, greetings, friends. Happy Monday. It sure is nice to be back here. Thanks to Rama Schneider for filling in for me on Friday. Rama always does a great job. It was great to have him here. I was, it's a long story anyway. Visiting, I tell you this one. I was visiting a friend of mine, Jerry, this guy's irrepressible. Anyhow, where I was when I was out of town, and he asked me not to mention the city because he actually did this thing. This was incredible. The phone company charges you extra to have an unlisted phone number, and Jerry, I've known Jerry for decades, and Jerry's very frugal, shall we say, and he thought it was silly that he should have to pay extra for the phone company not to have to pay the expense of printing his phone number in the phone book. I mean, it's reverse logic, right? So when he got, this was like a decade ago, this was like 10 years ago. And so when he signed up for his second phone line, what is now his fax line, what was then his computer line, he wanted it to be unlisted, it wasn't. So when they asked him his name, he said his name was Isaiah Unliste. He said, but I go by short for Isaiah, Izzy. So, Izzy, I-Z-Z-Y, and then, Unliste, U-N-L-I-S-T-E-D. And, the clerk, promptly took the order, and about 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks later, he gets a call from the phone company going, is Mr. Unlisted there? And Jerry says, it's, Unliste. And the woman says, we are, something to the effect of, the phone company is not amused by this. What is your real name? And Jerry goes to this man, he goes, I am so tired of this anti-Semitism. I'm a French Jew. It's Unliste. It's Isaiah Unliste. People have been making fun of my name my whole life. I can't believe you. And she's all of a sudden, she's, I'm sorry, Mr. Unliste. Forgive me. And he's still in the telephone book in one of America's major cities. As is he unlisted? You can call. It's just great fun just to call the operator and say, "What number would you like? Unlisted? No. What number? No. Unlisted. Well, what's the first? Is he unlisted? And you can imagine. Anyway, so Anyhow, I forgive the digression. It's a I thought it was a fun story. It's I've since heard others. You know, other folks who've come up with curious things. Have you had your EGCG today? By the way, we're gonna in the first hour of today's program. I want to get into Scrooge and Marley, Inc., this piece that I have up on commondreams.org this week and is making its way around the web about, you know, what is the middle class in America? Where did it come from? How did it happen? And what is it going to take for us to strengthen and restore the middle class to the United States? What is it that Sweden knows that we don't know? Why is it that Norway has a strong middle class and our middle class has been steadily collapsing since 1980? So we're going to get into that in our first hour. In our second hour, is Dick Cheney practicing the big lie and will it work? And in our third hour, could John Ashcroft go to jail just like John Mitchell did? Interesting developments on that front. And of course, lots and lots of news in between. And your calls, if you would like, are number 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, and feel free. Welcome and greetings to the folks in our chat room. You can get there by going to tomhartman.com, and the chat room is already full. Interesting conversation going on. So, anyhow, have you had your EGCG today? From USA Today over the weekend. Science, which previously linked green tea to lower cholesterol and blood sugar, now finds that 3 cups of green tea may have enough of the potent antioxidant ECGC. Now, ECGC is a fancy way of saying the polyphenol epigallocatechingalate. Okay, and I'm probably mispronouncing that, but anyhow, it's a a polyphenol. These are in the family of antioxidants. And the science, the ECGC, is able to force certain cancer cells into a situation in which, incredible as it may seem, they must die or be killed. The cancer cells die in a sort of cellular suicide, a condition called apoptosis. And further evidence also shows that ECGC has an inhibitory effect on the enzyme urokinase, which is required for tumor formations, thus preventing the formation of tumors in the first place. Now, that's not from the USA Today story. That's a little background of what ECGC is. So here are the USA Today story. Science, which has previously linked green tea to lower cholesterol and blood sugar, now finds that three cups of green tea may have enough of the potent antioxidant ECGC to fight cancer and heart disease. In Japanese tests, ECGC deactivated a growth protein on human lung cancer cells. At Boston University, patients with vascular dysfunction, a trigger for heart attack, were nearly normal 2 hours after taking 300 milligrams of EGCG, couple cups of green tea. I remember back in 86, I spent the month of November of 86 in China, in Beijing, studying acupuncture at the International Acupuncture Teaching Hospital there, the largest teaching hospital for acupuncture in the world. They have about 500, 600, 700 patients. I don't know, it's fairly large. And I was struck by how few, frankly, cases of cancer there were. I don't, you know, they may have just been showing up in other hospitals, but it was not the more common thing that we were dealing with. And it may be because they all drink green tea. Anyhow, who knows? I thought you might want to know about that. I thought that was an interesting one. Where did it go here? Here we go. Yep. Our alert for the day, bushwhacked. And this is from the Bush Green Watch. When asked about our insecure energy supply and the high price of gasoline, President Bush has said, and I quote, "If people had acted on my energy bill when I submitted it 3 years ago, we'd be in a much better situation today," end quote. But when you look at it, actually, that's not quite the case. The energy bill, which remains stuck in Congress, is actually a multi-billion dollar giveaway to the oil, coal, and nuclear industries and will actually make gasoline even more expensive while weakening public health and environmental protections, according to BushGreenWatch.org. This information came from the Energy Information Administration, a statistical arm of the Energy Department, that is, as in, of the United States government. They suggested that the bill will fail to either reduce prices or imports, but it will cost taxpayers $31 billion. According to the EIA, gasoline prices will increase by 6.45% by 2010. If the energy bill becomes law, however, EIA says gas prices will increase by 6.6% by 2010. In other words, if George Bush's energy bill had been passed, gas prices would be going up even faster than they are now. Over the long term, by 2025, the energy bill would result in a price jump of 10.3%. Now, again, this is according to Bush administration statistics. Over the long term, by 2025, if Bush's this energy bill that Cheney cobbled together with the help of a bunch of people from the energy industry, you know, this is the one that he's gone to the Supreme Court to keep secret, just even who was there, much less letting us see the notes of the discussion. Over the long term, by 2025, the energy bill would result in a price jump of 10.3%, while under business as usual, in other words, no energy bill, the price of gas would have only gone up 8.2%. The energy bill will also fail to reduce oil imports. According to EIA, again, the Energy Department, oil imports are projected to increase 24.7% by 2010. If the energy bill passes, they will increase only slightly less, 23.8%. Over the long term, the energy bill would only modestly affect imports, although it would slightly increase them. Finally, the energy bill would have a devastating effect on our environment. Most notoriously, the bill would open the spectacular Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to oil drilling and production. Drilling in the refuge will have no effect on today's gas prices because it will take oil from the refuge 10 years to reach the market. However, oil from the refuge would provide the nation with, at best, a 180-day supply. Yes, there's enough oil in the Alaskan refuge to supply the United States for 6 months. However, that's enough to make billions, with a B, billions of dollars in profit, with a P, for the big oil companies that donate to the Bush and Cheney administration and who showed up at the meeting pushing this thing. President Bush says his energy bill will reduce prices, but the numbers generated by his own energy department tell a different story. Yes, indeed. Well, so 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Brian from Grand Rapids is on the line. Hey, Brian, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. What's up?
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
I am great, but I'll get better.
Okay.
What's on your mind?
I was in a little debate over the weekend, and somebody brought up a news report about Putin saying that Saddam Hussein was planning terrorist attacks inside the United States.
Yeah, Putin actually had said, he didn't say that that was true. What he said was that immediately after 9/11, Russian intelligence had provided U.S. intelligence with the suggestion or information that Iraq represented a threat to the United States. And this has got a lot of people scratching their heads. You know, Putin, of course, was the head of the KGB. He's a master of disinformation. The United States, the Russians, you know, as much as we, you know, pat each other on the back and say we're friends, and George Bush says he looked into Vladimir Putin's eyes and saw his soul brother, they view themselves as competitors with us. They still have around 9,000 missiles pointed at us. Competitors in many ways, you know, for natural resources, lots of other things. So it's an interesting one. You were going to say, though.
Oh, I was just wondering what your take was on it. I wonder, so you're saying that it's a consider the source kind of thing?
Yeah, well, I find it fascinating. First of all, it has never been cited by this administration, by the Blair administration, by the 9/11 Commission, by anybody. You know, so there's no paper trail. There's no evidence that there actually was information from Russia. Might have just been a phone call from Vlad to George, who knows, on the one hand. Although you would think that somebody would have cited it. And secondly, if it did come down the line, you have to wonder, since we know now in retrospect that Iraq represented not only no threat to the United States, but not even a threat to its neighbors, you know, what was Putin's motivation in trying to get the United States to leap into this sort of thing? I mean, this could have been a real mess for the United States if we were to attack a country that didn't represent any kind of immediate threat to us, right? I mean, you know, darken our reputation, harm us internationally, divert enormous amount of our resources. I mean, you know, the Soviet Union, which, you know, some cons like to say, well, Reagan bankrupted them by forcing them to spend all the, here, what have we spent, $180 billion now in Iraq? I don't know. Who won? That of Vlad or George? Interesting, curious question. Brian, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Pine River, Michigan, where the abandoned Velsicol plant leaks cancer-causing chemicals into the water. It's a danger neighbors will be living with for years to come. The Bush administration says polluters no longer have to pay to clean up the mess they leave behind. Taxpayers do. That means less money, fewer cleanups, and more families left at risk. Mr. President, there is a better way. Make polluters pay. Protect our kids and communities.
Hey, what does this word make you think of? Tchaikovsky.
Isn't it? So what's the word?
No, that is the word.
You lost me.
All right, who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker. Before her, there was only soda crackers.
Maybe they're not getting enough art. Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music and Martha Graham's dance. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. As many as 400 hourly workers at the General Motors Powertrain Flint, Michigan North Complex are facing indefinite layoffs or placement in a job bank this week, the company said. That's, another little blip here. In fact, the statistics, this is just an absolutely fascinating thing about how the statistics are being compiled. Did you know that in April of 2004, three months ago, that the United States government changed the way they calculate the number of jobs that are being created? They came up with this brand new formula. It's the Labor Department, of course, which is run by Elaine Chao, who is the wife of Republican Mad Dog Senator Mitch McConnell from Kentucky. One of the guys who led the impeached Bill Clinton, Republican coup d'état efforts. Anyhow, the Labor Department has decided that the way that they were calculating jobs before didn't work as well, and so they've come up with this new strategy. They call it the birth-death formula. Literally. It's called the net birth-death modeling process. It has nothing to do with the birth or death of you or me. What it is whenever a company reports zero employees that was previously reporting employees, they assume that that company has gone out of business, which is a safe assumption. I mean, they always assumed that in the past, and so they counted the number of employees and jobs it created as zero, right? Makes sense. Well, now they've come to the assumption that for every company that goes out of business, there must be one coming into business. And, there's some logic behind that. I mean, there are businesses being created all the time in the United States, constantly, and a fine thing it is. But they've just come up with this one-to-one thing, here's how the Labor Department explains it. During the net birth-death modeling process, simulated monthly probability estimates containing continuous and imputed employment over a five-year period are created and compared to populations' employment levels that contain actual business birth and death, along with continuous units moving. Well, you get it. I mean, it's in this incredible, thick, dense language. Basically, what they're saying is we're just making stuff up. And outside economists have tried to repeat their calculations. Paul Krugman wrote about this, I believe, a week or so ago in the New York Times. It's been written about, actually, in several of the economic publications. I believe it was the Financial Times. I read it over, last week when I was traveling. And independent economists have been unable to replicate these calculations. I mean, real economists can't come up with the same numbers. And they go to the government and they say, hey, tell us where these numbers are coming from. You said we created 100,000 jobs last year or last, in the last quarter. For example, the April 2004, of the 288,000 jobs that Bush is running around saying we created in April, 288,000. 270,000 of them were added from the birth-death model. In other words, before April, when they came up with this addition of the birth-death model to the figuring out how many jobs there are, those 270,000 jobs wouldn't have been included, which means that in April, the Labor Department would have had to report that only 18,000 jobs have been created, which, of course, is way below the 150,000 or so that we know vanish every month just, routinely. And, just to keep, not vanish, but just to keep up with people graduating from college and coming into the workforce, you have to have at least 150,000 to 180,000 jobs every single month. So it would have been a net negative number, as it has been for the last few years. But under this new modeling system of the Labor Department, 270,000 out of the 288,000 jobs in April were just created out of thin air. Expect to see more of this. In March, the Labor Department imagined 171,000 jobs. And in May, they imagined 248,000, again, based on the birth-death model. 94% of those jobs were based on the birth-death model. Remarkable, eh? 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you.
past, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The war in Iraq has provided doctors with something they don't normally see. A huge number of young, healthy Americans with devastating injuries. For every soldier killed in combat, many more are injured, losing an arm, leg, or multiple limbs. At Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C., doctors have fit more than 100 soldiers with technologically sophisticated artificial limbs, some costing as much as $150,000. Congress is expected to approve $10 million for construction of a new amputee care center at Walter Reed Hospital.
The success of the United Auto Workers when it comes to unionizing Japanese car factories in America has been less than stellar, but hopefully with a nudge from their counterparts in Japan, more progress can be made. The president of Japan's largest auto workers union says he's recently begun pressuring Japan's largest automakers, including Nissan and Toyota, to lessen their resistance to union organizing drives at U.S. factories. The UAW will still fight an uphill battle at many plants, though, as most are located in southern states, where so-called right-to-work laws make it more difficult to organize a union workplace.
Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry endorsed a $1.85 minimum wage hike on Friday, saying that it would significantly fatten American workers' paychecks. The lowest wage for U.S. workers hasn't risen for 7 years, since it became $5.15 per hour in 1997. Kerry told invited attendees at Northern Virginia Community College raising the minimum wage would give 7.4 million people who make less than $7 an hour in the United States enough extra money to buy 10 months worth of groceries.
The results of a preliminary investigation by the Acting Inspector General of the U.S. Treasury accuse IBM of manipulating government data in a policy debate over pension. IBM lobbyists allegedly circulated a list of talking points against legislation that would have prevented companies from shortchanging long-term employees if they changed their pensions from a defined benefit to a cash balance plan. The legislation failed. Officially, the Treasury Department took no position on the bill, yet there's evidence Treasury's top lawyers may have worked with IBM assisting with its lobbying efforts. A final report is expected in August. No criminal charges have yet been filed.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. America's race gap extends from birth through old age. Researchers at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation looked at 14,000 nursing homes in the United States that individually accept 85% of their residents from Medicare and found a wide racial disparity in the quality of their care. Compared to whites, African Americans are more than four times as likely to be placed in homes that are short-staffed and run down. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's a crock.
Constitutional process blocked. And now we got the White House crock.
It's the White House crock. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Tom Hartman here with you 26 minutes before the hour. It is Monday the 21st of June. 379 days since Joe Wilson's wife Valerie Plame was outed in an act of treason by somebody in this administration. A senior administration official.
We're going to find out the senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
No idea whatsoever. Anyhow, did you catch the this just flew through the wire services yesterday? It was in the Washington Post this morning. You know, the what's generally considered the main stepping stone to the Supreme Court is the Federal Appeals Court, the circuit courts. There are 9 district courts in the United States. In fact, in the old days, back in the 1800s, in 1886, for example, when corporate personhood was decided, the Supreme Court Justice, Stephen J. Field, who in the California, in the Ninth Circuit of California, was the sole justice at that time. At that time, the circuit courts had one single justice, was the one who decided corporations were persons. And then he went back to Washington, D.C., and was a member of the United States Supreme Court at the same time, and argued that, ultimately, you know, lost it, although history argues with that. That's a whole other thing. But anyhow, used to be that the circuit court judges were also the Supreme Court judges. They did both. They'd be Supreme Court judges for 3 months out of the year. 9 months out of the year, they'd do what's called riding the circuit. They'd travel back to their home districts, and they'd be judges. And the circuit, the court in Washington, D.C., the First Circuit, is the one that is considered one of the very most important, because most cases that have to do with malfeasance in Washington, you know, for example, if Ashcroft is being, so, you know, when John Mitchell went to jail, the Attorney General of the United States, when John Mitchell went to jail, it was the First Circuit, of course. It was in Washington, D.C., because the crime was committed there. So this is not only a very important court, but it's also very often the stepping stone to the Supreme Court. People are pulled out of the First Circuit and, you know, nominated to the Supreme Court. And now we discover that Thomas B. Griffith, the guy that George Bush has been pushing to be a member of the Federal Appeals Court in Washington, D.C., has been, for the past 4 years in Utah, practicing law without a license, which is a felony. He applied to sit for the Utah bar exam, but didn't show up. And then, you know, got a job as a corporate counsel saying, hey, I'm a lawyer, and, you know, but according to the state bar, there is no general exemption for general counsels or corporate counsels. So here we got a felon being promoted for the First Circuit Court. Nothing surprising, I suppose. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Treasury Secretary John Snow this weekend, the Center for American Progress reports, tried to downplay recent polls that show 58% of Americans disapprove of President Bush's handling of the economy. And I want to get into that in this little segment here. He says, Snow says, there's been so much attention to other things, particularly the war in Iraq, that has deflated attention from the economy. Well, I would say not. I think that people are paying attention to the economy and, you know, and that's why the ratings are so low. The Boston Globe reports, with traditional middle-class jobs vanishing along with factories, some economists worry that the nation's labor force is stratifying into a skilled, well-paid elite and a mass of lesser-skilled workers struggling to hold on to their wage standard of living, end quote. Since 1983, this basically since the beginning of the Reagan Revolution, as it were, when, you know, the top marginal tax rate was dropped from 70% to 28%, and the enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act, which kept corporations from getting so big that they could dominate industries and even dominate government, Reagan stopped enforcing that. This was the beginning of the end, I believe, of the great American middle class of the 20th century. Since 1983, the wealth of the top 1% has doubled, at the same time that the wealth of the bottom 40% of America has been cut in half. And, of course, the White House solution, putting up on the Labor Department's website information, the Commerce Department, excuse me, on how corporations can offshore jobs. It's remarkable. You know, this last round of tax cuts gave an average $40,000 tax cut to every millionaire in America. At the same time, 1.7 million Americans struggle below the poverty line. Why? Because the president's playing to his base. As he told a $800 a plate crowd during the 2000 campaign, "This is an impressive crowd, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elites. I call you my base." And, of course, CEO pay is on the increase. Corporate profits are up 62% since the last recovery. But the average worker in America's pay in the 3 years of the Bush administration has declined 0.6%. And you add in inflation, and it's actually worse than that. Lawmakers on Capitol Hill are pressing for an immediate increase in the minimum wage, which is currently at a 50-year low in terms of purchasing power. That would be adjusted for inflation. But the Bush administration has refused to support the proposal, even though it would mean an immediate wage hike for 7 million workers. I mean, and this would put money in the pockets of people who are going to spend the money, which would stimulate the economy. You would think that they would want to do it just because it would, you know, kind of jumpstart things and get things going and all that sort of thing. But they don't. They don't want to do this. So that's their line, and they're going to stick to it. I understand. It's anyhow. And there it is right there. Yes, indeed. I want to do a congratulate the American Apparel Corporation and SweatX, two companies in Los Angeles. The AP reports they are both now profitable. And they're making T-shirts primarily and other clothes, mostly cotton clothes in the Los Angeles area. And they are paying $12.50 an hour, which is twice the state minimum wage, plus vacation pay, bidets, plus health benefits. The two-year-old SweatX has also seen its business grow. CEO Roth wouldn't reveal the privately held company's financial figures, but said, we're just about breaking even now. It's doing well, and... So on they go. You know, it's great to see. But see, that's the good side of the story. The bad side of the story is that those are the exceptions. And, you know, yeah, there are some great socially responsible companies out there. I would say the majority of small businesses in America have a high degree of social responsibility because the owner slash boss is right there with his or her employees. What are you going to do? I mean, these aren't the days of Scrooge and Marley yet. But with large corporations, we have a whole different issue, and this is the thing that concerns me. In fact, I want to get into this very quickly. Before we do, let's just take a quick call here. Armin in Florida is call 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Armin, what's up? Armin,
hello.
Yeah, you're on
hello?
The air.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about a few things, and then I got to tell you a quick story, if you don't mind.
Actually, it's going to have to be really short here, Armin, because I got a bunch of stuff I want to get to. So what's the point?
Well, first off, back to Reagan, because you were talking about him. I think it's ironic that the government and taxpayers ended up buying his estate out there. Don't you?
I don't know the details of it, so.
No, the government did.
Okay.
State of California ended up paying him a primo price for his property out there.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, private never works for the... I mean, public never works for the little guy to help him, but, boy, it works wonders for the wealthy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't disagree. And you said you had another point you wanted to make.
In the, I got a story. A friend went in a gas station, and he commented while another person was filling up his car. He says, man, this is outrageous, $2.05 a gallon for gas.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy commented to him, he says, well, you know, war costs money.
Yeah.
And my friend commented back, he says, sir, he says, that war is on the taxpayer's credit card of this country. He says, the fact of the reason why the fuel is so high is because the oil companies put an oil man in office. That's why they're getting record profits. And the guy just looked at him all glassy-eyed.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, Armin. I mean, you point out the fact that the oil companies in the last couple of quarters, the American-based oil companies, have shown the largest profits in their history. I mean, going back to the days of John Rockefeller, there haven't been such huge profits. And, gee, profit. Price, is there a relationship? Raise the price of something, make more profit on it? Could be. Anyhow, I wrote this piece called Scrooge and Marley, Inc., The True Conservative Agenda for CommonDreams.org, and it's floating around the web now. And what I pointed out was that basically in the 6,000-year history of civilization, we have never really seen the emergence of a middle class until very recently. Of what would be referred to as a middle class, and that the founders of this country saw the middle class as a really essential thing, and they were they I don't think that they were in super in-depth in their analysis of it. Actually, Jefferson was in his later years when he really started looking into this stuff and writing about it. But early on, I mean, what they didn't realize was basically that that pretty much anybody could come to America, make a living, and do okay because there was all this, quote, free land, end quote, that was, a lot of Native Americans had died from the diseases that came over from Europe. In fact, that was the leading cause of death for most of the East Coast Native Americans and throughout the Midwest, and freeing up land, as it were. And then, of course, there was the Indian Wars, you know, the largest budget item in George Washington's budget. So anyhow, that, you know, all this free land, everybody could become a farmer, a plowman, as Jefferson referred to them, and they were producing goods, right, food, which made cities possible, and mercantilism, you know, the small businesses springing up, and just, you know, the whole economy kind of grew, and the average working person, Jefferson referred to as the yeoman. And they were very clear that some level of government intervention was necessary in order to prevent a repeat of what they had all seen, certainly in, and were still seeing actually in 1776 in Europe, which is the world of Charles Dickens. Every year we read to our families or see on TV some variation of or make reference to a Christmas Carol, Charles Dickens' story about Scrooge and Marley, Inc. Bob Marley, of course, had been long dead, and Ebenezer Scrooge was running the company. And his employee, Bob Cratchit, and Marley's ghost coming and Scrooge having this epiphany and all this kind of stuff. And it's a marvelous story about transformation and, you know, very archetypal story, which is one of the reasons it survived so long. But the subtext of the story that most Americans don't get is that the story by Dickens, A Christmas Carol, along with most of Dickens' other writings, the subtext to them was really the plight of the working poor. I mean, here you had a guy who had full-time employment. He had a full-time job, and a pretty good one. Right? He was, you know, it was a white-collar job. He was the bookkeeper for Scrooge and Marley, Inc., Bob Cratchit. And yet, he had no access to health care, which meant that his son was either going to die or be disabled for life. He didn't have enough money to buy Christmas dinner for his family. He couldn't buy gifts for his children for Christmas. He lived in such fear of his job security that he put up with years of abuse from an overtly abusive employer, Ebenezer Scrooge. And that was just the norm. That was just taken for granted. Because what happens is that without some intervention in the marketplace, in other words, if the government doesn't say, okay, you know, y'all can play the game of business just fine, but there's some rules to the game. And the rules are set up in a way that you play the game of business, you get rich, fine. And it's got to be useful to society. It's got to help our society in some way. And the three pillars of creating the middle class, well, in the beginning of the United States, first of all, they had progressive taxation. It was taxation largely on property. The income tax didn't come along until 1913, but it was tariffs and taxes on property. And Jefferson suggested, you know, is a great quote here, actually, taxes should actually be increased geometrically, not just, you know, linearly. As people became increasingly wealthy. This is the basis of, in fact, here's the quote, a 1785 letter to James Madison. Jefferson said, another means of silently lessening the inequality of property is to exempt all from taxation below a certain point and to tax the higher portions of property in geometrical progression as they rise. And he understood well what those words are. So, you know, the three pillars of the middle class, the free education, Jefferson created the University of Virginia, free tuition, The last free university system in the United States to go was the University of California. Of course, Ronald Reagan ended free tuition there as governor. And so free education, progressive taxation, and giving labor some right, some basic rights, some fundamental rights. Giving Marley, or rather giving Bob Cratchit the right to say back to Scrooge, hey, you can't treat me this way, I'm sorry. There are rules to this game. And, of course, that's the labor movement, which was, you know, in large part ratified in the United States in 1935 with the Wagner Act. So these are the three pillars, and they're all under attack now by the cons. This is Tom Hartman, 10 minutes before the hour.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the Founding Fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No, you're not. I can see your van. You're the cable company. I'm not going to let you raise my rates again. I'm calling American Satellite to get a DirecTV system.
Presidential candidate.
Are you going to offer me over 125 digital quality channels for as little as $39.99 a month, including my local channels?
Ice Cream Man.
Yeah, like that's going to work. If I call American Satellite right now, I can get a four-room DirecTV system, including professional installation free. Can you beat that?
Pizza Man.
You already tried that. Well, that's it. I'm calling to get my DirecTV system.
Call 800-505-1546. That's 800-505-1546. For new customers only. Annual programming commitment required. Ask how you can get your first 6 months for only $29.99 a month, a $60 value. Offer ends July 17th. Call now. 800-505-1546.
Flashing fish and other glow-in-the-dark creatures are common in the deep sea. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Very little sunlight penetrates more than a few hundred feet past the surface of the sea, but the blackness of the ocean depths is punctuated by the glowing and blinking lights of all kinds of sea creatures. In fact, almost all the fish and animals that live in the deep water create some kind of light. Tracy Sutton studies this deep, dark environment. Sutton is a marine scientist at the Harbor Branch Oceanographic Institution in Fort Pierce, Florida.
Almost everything down there is luminescent. Fish, shrimp, squid, jellyfish, they all can produce light.
Sutton says many species of jellyfish glow all over. They look like tiny moons as they dance through the water. Other animals have specific organs that light up. The dragonfish is a good example. This jet black fish has a long appendage dangling from its chin like a whisker. Sutton says the ends of it are studded with flashing lights.
It's the same kind of chemistry as that found in a firefly. There's a protein called luciferin, and if you add oxygen, it glows. It gives off light. and they can control the amount of light and the duration of the flashes neurologically.
Sutton says dragonfish use their flashing lights to entice prey to come closer. Other fish use light as a defense. They flash a bright light in the face of an attacker and then try to swim away. Sutton says it's not clear how or why deep-sea creatures developed this trait.
Some things are luminescent that don't even have eyes, so you wonder what possible benefit it could have. It could be that it's just a leftover function of some other process.
Whatever the reason, Sutton says luminescence is the rule rather than the exception in the deep sea. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Bring them on.
To all the troops I sent to war, who won't be coming home no more, I'm glad you came along. I dedicate this song to all the troops I sent to war.
What a tragedy. 4 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. And, yeah, it's... those seeking profits, Thomas Jefferson said. Those seeking profits. You know, he got it. He says, were they given total freedom? This is, by the way, described as laissez-faire economics. When George Soros wrote his absolutely brilliant book called The Crisis of Modern Capitalism, he lays it out, laissez-faire economics. The doctrine that the rich should define the policies not only of the marketplace but ultimately of the nation itself, because they control the wealth. And Jefferson understood this. He wrote, those seeking profits, were they given total freedom, would not be the ones to trust to keep government pure and our rights secure. Indeed, Jefferson wrote, it has always been those seeking wealth who were the source of corruption in government. He went on to say, this is in an 1816 letter he wrote to Samuel Crucible, he says, I am not among those who fear the people. They, and not the rich, are our dependents for continued freedom. And then he talks about, you know, we must make our choice between economy and liberty, profusion and servitude. Otherwise, as the people of England are, our people, like them, must come to labor 16 hours in the 24, and the 16th being insufficient to afford us bread, we must live as they do now on oatmeal and potatoes, have no time to think, no means of calling the mismanagers to account, but be glad to obtain subsistence by hiring ourselves to rivet their chains on the necks of our fellow sufferers. And Jefferson, pretty clear about, in fact, he said that this large class of Bob Cratchits, you know, of terrified workers, was such a normal thing that he says some philosophers observe it to be so general in this world that they've mistaken it for the natural instead of the abusive state of man. Building the middle class was overtly one of the goals of the founders of this nation. You want it back? Let's work for union rights, a livable wage, free public education up to and including college, and a strengthening of our public institutions, and progressive taxation. It's Tom Hartman with you. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The war in Iraq has provided doctors with something they don't normally see. A huge number of young, healthy Americans with devastating injuries. For every soldier killed in combat, many more are injured, losing an arm, leg, or multiple limbs. At Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C., doctors have fit more than 100 soldiers with technologically sophisticated artificial limbs, some costing as much as $150,000. Congress is expected to approve $10 million for construction of a new amputee care center at Walter Reed Hospital.
The success of the United Auto Workers when it comes to unionizing Japanese car factories in America has been less than stellar, but hopefully with a nudge from their counterparts in Japan, more progress can be made. The president of Japan's largest auto workers union says he's recently begun pressuring Japan's largest automakers, including Nissan and Toyota, to lessen their resistance to union organizing drives at U.S. factories. The UAW will still fight an uphill battle at many plants, though, as most are located in southern states, where so-called right-to-work laws make it more difficult to organize a union workplace.
Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry endorsed a $1.85 minimum wage hike on Friday, saying that it would significantly fatten American workers' paychecks. The lowest wage for U.S. workers hasn't risen for 7 years, since it became $5.15 per hour in 1997. Kerry told invited attendees at Northern Virginia Community College raising the minimum wage would give 7.4 million people who make less than $7 an hour in the United States enough extra money to buy 10 months' worth of groceries.
The results of a preliminary investigation by the Acting Inspector General of the U.S. Treasury accuse IBM of manipulating government data in a policy debate over pension. IBM lobbyists allegedly circulated a list of talking points against legislation that would have prevented companies from shortchanging long-term employees if they changed their pensions from a defined benefit to a cash balance plan. The legislation failed. Officially, the Treasury Department took no position on the bill, yet there's evidence Treasury's top lawyers may have worked with IBM assisting with its lobbying efforts. A final report is expected in August. No criminal charges have yet been filed.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. America's race gap extends from birth through old age. Researchers at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation looked at 14,000 nursing homes in the United States that individually accept 85% of their residents from Medicare and found a wide racial disparity in the quality of their care. Compared to whites, African Americans are more than four times as likely to be placed in homes that are short-staffed and run down. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Does George W. get up every morning and gargle with a big glass of political cynicism? Or is he genetically cynical and just can't help himself? Take his recent radio address on Memorial Day weekend. Bush wrapped himself as tightly as possible in the flag and blathered on at length about how much he loves those veterans who have gone to war and fought for our freedom, a noble stand that he personally avoided taking when his time came, using family connections to keep him safely out of harm's way. But that's another story. In his address, George told the nation that we can acknowledge the debt we owe these veterans by, quote, showing our respect and gratitude. I don't know if he gargled before delivering this radio sermon, but I do know that just hours before it, Bush's budget office announced that it would cut $1 billion out of existing veterans' health care programs next year if Bush gets elected this fall. There's gratitude for you. These programs have already been so short-changed by Bush that his own Secretary of Veterans Affairs has criticized their inadequacy. At present, nearly 350,000 injured and ill vets are having to wait in line to get admitted for health care because the VA system is so backed up. The average wait is more than 6 months. Yet rather than cutting the backlog, as Bush promised to do when he took office, he now proposes to cut 540 VA staffers who review disability claims to speed up the line and help veterans get the care they need. This billion-dollar cut comes on top of Bush's ongoing attempt to close veterans' hospitals all across the country, his $50 million cut in medical research on new prosthetic technologies for dismembered vets, and his cutting off of 164,000 veterans from their existing prescription drug coverage. This is Jim Hightower saying, veterans could use a little less rhetorical respect from the president and a whole lot more tangible support.
America is a country of entrepreneurs, and if you're a small business owner, you're helping shoulder the lion's share of the U.S. economy. You can lighten that load a little by joining Sam's Club. Sam Walton created Sam's Club to give small business owners the purchasing power of big businesses. So no matter what kind of business you own, when you shop at Sam's Club, you get everyday low costs on products you need every day. And you can rely on us to carry those products at low warehouse prices. To save you time, we offer click and pull and fax and pull, convenient services to help you order ahead for fast pickup. Place your order at samsclub.com or by fax before 5 p.m. And at no extra charge, it's ready to pick up the next morning. Now that's teamwork. And we'd like to be a small part of your team. After all, while you may be carrying around the weight of the American economy, you shouldn't have to do all the heavy lifting by yourself. Join the club, Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Our Bush flip-flop of the day. I got some 50 or 60 of them here. We'll just pick one a day. Bush supports mandatory caps on carbon dioxide. This on 9/29. George Bush says he will work to establish mandatory reduction targets for emissions of four main pollutants, sulfur dioxide, nitrogen oxide, mercury, and carbon dioxide. And then a few years later, as President Bush wrote in a letter to Chuck Hagel on March 13th, I do not, however, believe that the government should impose on power plants mandatory emission reductions for carbon dioxide, which is not a pollutant under the Clean Air Act. So, Bush flip-flop for the day. GOP platform, 1-866-889-8894, by the way, our telephone number if you'd like to call in. Bush platform, the 2000 GOP platform, I'm not sure the word, inconsistency of the day. It's fascinating. I mean, you go through the platform of the GOP, on which Bush was elected, and virtually all of these promises have been broken. Here's one. This item number 8. As idle indulgence gives way to a new Republican president in the coming new period of consequences, the United States can again regain the hope it lost 8 years ago. We can restore our country's sense of international purpose and national honor. And then we see things like CBS News saying, White House probed over leak. The alleged motive for outing the CIA agent was revenge against her husband, Joe Wilson.
Wilson says, for an administration that came to Washington promising to restore honor and dignity to the White House, this is kind of a low blow, even in a bare-knuckle town like Washington. New York Times editorial, where is the honor and dignity? As far as I can tell, nobody in the Bush administration, this is the International Herald Tribune, as far as I can tell, nobody in the Bush administration has ever paid a price for being wrong. Instead, people are severely punished for telling inconvenient truths. Or as the Guardian notes on May 6th of this year, this is the new gulag. Bush has created a global network of extra-legal and secret U.S. prisons with thousands of inmates. The Guardian notes the Senate Armed Services Committee was briefed behind closed doors for the first time not only about Abu Ghraib, but about military and CIA prisons in Afghanistan. Many of them, Democratic and Republican, were infuriated that there was no accountability and no punishment and demanded a special investigation, but the Republican leadership quashed it. So our GOP events for the day, 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Chuck in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
I got a question for you. I'm an insomniac, so I listen to a lot of strange radio shows.
Okay.
But anyway, there was some of these really right-wing Christian guys, and they were disparaging the fact that Thomas Jefferson and Franklin were considered deists.
Yeah, and also George Washington, and also Thomas Paine, and also George Mason, and it was actually probably the major. Among most of the well-known founders, James Madison, almost all of them were deists, and Masons also. Those are their two failings in the mind.
My question is, because I think there's a lot of us out here have been discussing this, what's a deist?
The deists, the belief of the deists was, and eventually it kind of got absorbed into the Unitarian movement and then discarded. It's sort of a dead religion now, as it were, although there are people trying to bring it back. The belief of the deists is that, or was that, I suppose now is that as well, that in the beginning there was an intelligence, a God, that God brought into being all of creation, set in place certain natural laws, and then just stood back and just lets things take their course. And does not intervene. They do not believe in an interventionist God, like the John Lennon song. No hell or heaven. Just the whole thing. There were arguments within the deists about what happens after people die. Whether consciousness endures and those things. But there was never any official position. The main position basically was that God created the world and then stepped back and let things take their course, and that there are certain natural laws that came along with the creation. There are the laws of nature, which fascinated Franklin and Jefferson, who were both amateur scientists. Well, Franklin was inducted into the French Academy of Sciences, one of the most famous scientists in the world of his time, and Jefferson was very into it. They thought that there were natural laws, and then they were trying to identify them. Electricity, gravity, things like this. Many of them were also of the opinion that there were natural laws that had to do with human behavior. That, for example, the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness was a natural law. It was part of the way that nature was defined in the creation. Not that the creation was 6,000 years ago or 20 million years ago. The deists didn't argue about evolution and stuff like that. This is all pre-Darwin. They considered these just natural laws. That's it in a nutshell.
I've also heard, and I know you probably had to move right along, but that a lot of these people were also heavily involved in the Rosicrucian movement, and I was wondering if there was any connection between the two.
Yeah, it may have been. I mentioned that most of them were deists, and most of them were also Masons. And in fact, George Washington's inauguration, there's a great the linotype of it, or whatever they call that, it was before it was photos, an etching of it, was actually a Masonic parade, and they all had their local Mason charter flags and things like that. And I think Jefferson was probably one of the few founders who actually wasn't a member of the Masons. Whether there is a connection between the two or not, I frankly don't know. Thanks for the call, though. Good to hear from you, Chuck. And we're going to move along here. 13 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. Number 12 from Santa Fe. Taxi driver number 12.
How you doing?
I am great. What's up?
I have my own chat room, and I'd like to plug it for a second. The name of the chat room is called Atheists, Deists, Freethinkers, and Theists.
Okay.
And if you just go, there's a big old, I don't know what to call it, it's like a bulletin board. No, it's not a bulletin board. It's a house of chat rooms. It's called, and the place is sfwest.com.
Uh-huh. And the deists are making a new stand there, is that?
Well, basically what I did is a couple of years ago I set this thing up as a, you know, to invite anybody for any ontological or anti-ontological kind of discussion. And, you know, it's back in the old days, there's a couple different, you know, when the Internet first started, there's these really combative political rooms and really combative religion or atheist rooms. And
sure.
I thought it was really pretty interesting. And then these places all went down after the dot-com bubble kind of dried up and Disney bought everything and destroyed everything, so I made my own chat room.
Uh-huh.
And
okay.
If you go to sfwest.com, sfwest.com, and hit chat lines and scroll to the bottom, you'll see the room. It says Atheists, Deists, Freethinkers, and Theists.
Okay, and you can learn more about deism there. Thanks a lot, number 12. I appreciate it. Your noise level on your cell phone there was maxing us out here. 15 minutes past the hour, then thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And before I get to the, you know, I want to talk about this 9/11 commission. And you know, is this administration engaging in what Joseph Goebbels referred to as the big lie? Tell a lie, make it big enough, tell it often enough, and people will believe it. Or is there a legitimate debate here? Yeah, is it just a semantic debate? I mean, you know, what's going on? And I want to talk about that for a few minutes. But first, our Bush Green Watch for this hour, the Bush administration blocks information on oil, gas drilling on public lands. Now, I find it particularly interesting that when George Bush told the Iraqi people not to destroy oil wells, and I think this clip at the end of it has his saying, "They're a source of wealth for the Iraqi people." Let's see that's how he ended it. This was during his declaration, his when he went on TV and said, "Okay, we're going to start bombing Baghdad now," and then he said, "And now I'd like to speak to those of you in Iraq," and he had an opportunity, of course, to say, you know, our soldiers are just like your soldiers, you know, they're all young men, let's try to minimize the deaths, you know, put down your weapons, join our side, you know, anything like that. Instead, this is what he said.
Your fate will depend on your actions. Do not destroy oil wells, a source of wealth that belongs to the Iraqi people.
Okay, so number one, do not destroy oil wells. That was his message to the Iraqis. And number two, he wraps it by saying, a source of wealth that belongs to the Iraqi people. Now, there are literally hundreds of millions of acres of public land, of land owned by you and me, land owned by the federal government or various state governments, most of it federal government, and, you know, held in trust for us, that contain oil and natural gas. And George Bush is saying and has said and is on record and repeatedly saying that all of the revenue from the Iraqi oil should go to the people of Iraq to pay for hospitals and education and retirement. I mean, this is actually in the draft constitution that they wrote, that guarantees Social Security, retirement, guarantees free health care for all, guarantees education, free education for all, and that it would be paid for by the oil that is on public lands. Well, we have oil on public lands in the United States, but the way that it works here is we lease the land to oil companies that make big contributions to politicians in Washington, and this is nothing unique to the Bush administration. I mean, this goes way back. And Democrats and Republicans are equally complicit in this and have been forever, for a long, long time. And traditionally, we said to the oil companies, hey, if you pump oil out of there, you got to pay us a royalty. The typical royalty has been 12.5% of the value. So while the Iraqi people get to keep 100% of the value of the oil that comes out, we keep 12.5% of the value. But now some public interest research groups, some public interest groups have said, well, specifically the Environmental Working Group, has said, we would like to know how much oil is being pumped and how much is being paid. And the Bush administration has just said that is not any of your business. A request for information on how much oil and gas private corporations are extracting from taxpayers' public lands has been stymied by the Bush administration's refusal to comply with the spirit of the Federal Freedom of Information Act. The government's response to the request imposes a cost-prohibitive fee and asserts it would take staff time to compile data, pushing the release of the information past the end of the year and notably past the upcoming presidential election. In other words, yeah, you know, we'll get you the information eventually. It's going to take at least a year about your and my gas and oil money. 20 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Tom Hartman here with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do they know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
The war they are in has been declared over by the same man who lied them into it. Their reward? Combat pay cut in half. $1.5 billion cut to their family housing. $20 billion cut to military health care. No health care for reservists.
My answer is bring them on.
Thousands wounded, hundreds dead, and no end in sight. If we support our troops, why can't Bush? Or is this what they mean when they say, an army of one?
In the foreword to Tom Hartman's book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, renowned author Joseph Chilton Pierce writes,
to discover brilliant, innovative, creative, and original thinking is one of life's rare privileges. To discover that such a thinker has focused on the most critical of all issues facing our species is encouraging. Because The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight is a seminal work offering a viewpoint original yet ancient, I see our situation today in a new light. And because of the scope and depth of this work, I find it inspiring as well as disturbing. A rather exhausted superlative in praise of Tom Hartman's book, The Prophet's Way, which I rightly called the most important book I've ever read. But now I find the sequel calling for equal praise, since the issue here addresses the whole of our species, and indeed all species.
The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 25 minutes past the hour. A Pentagon audit has found widespread deficiencies in the way Halliburton tracks billions of dollars of government contracts in Iraq and Kuwait, according to leading to significant overcharges, according to the Financial Times. The findings have been bolstered by graphic accounts from former employees who told a U.S. congressman that the company's subcontractors charged $100 to launder a 15-pound bag of clothing and abandoned $85,000 trucks when they suffered flat tires. Critics say Halliburton, an oil field services company formerly headed by Dick Cheney, I'm quoting here from the Financial Times, has mismanaged more than $8 billion of Iraq contracts. They also raise further questions about the Pentagon's increased reliance on private contractors to handle services from providing meals to fuel delivery. Henry Waxman, of course, is one of the leaders in trying to ferret this stuff out. You know, what's going on here? Marie DeYoung, a Halliburton logistics specialist, told Mr. Waxman's office she was discouraged by Halliburton managers when she raised questions about the exorbitant prices for laundry in five-star hotels. Ms. DeYoung was told, she said, that she was providing too much information to Pentagon auditors and concluded that the corporate culture was one of intimidation and fear. That's a... Dick Cheney must have felt very comfortable there. James Warren, a former KBR truck driver, claims he was fired a few weeks after he called Randy Harrell, the division's chief executive, to complain about widespread theft and abandoning of trucks because of simple maintenance problems. So, the point of this story, this isn't to pick on Halliburton. I don't say that isn't Halliburton terrible? Halliburton is a corporation who has as its first mandate to increase the wealth of its stockholders. I mean, that's the bottom line. There's nothing wrong with that. Dick Cheney owns a couple hundred thousand shares of Halliburton stock. If Halliburton gets more government money, if Halliburton can squirrel it away in some way, if Dick Cheney and all the other stockholders get richer and richer. The Carlyle Group, no doubt, has lots and lots of Halliburton stock. The Bush family's involvement with that. It's not specifically to criticize Halliburton. It's to say that historically there's a reason why the Army did its own laundry and people pulled KP service. Why the Army and the Marine Corps and the Navy and the Air Force, of course, why our armed forces did their own cooking. Why they did their own purchasing of food stuff. And the reason is very simple. Because when your only job, when your official mission statement, is to feed people, then you make sure that they get fed and you spend all your time thinking about that. Or if your main job is to make sure that the laundry gets done, you spend all your time thinking about that and working on that and trying to get the laundry done right. But when your main job is to increase the wealth of stockholders, and the way that you're going to do that is by feeding people or by doing their laundry or delivering their mail or whatever, then you have a situation where it's very easy for these ethical problems, as it were, to slip in. There are many, many areas. The vast majority of our economy represents areas where, you know, the government should really have very little hand in, you know, other than enforcing things like the Sherman Antitrust Act and you know, basic illegalities of corporate behavior. But there are some areas where traditionally government has done things in ways that are actually far more efficient than when we try to privatize things. And Halliburton has become the poster child of this. We have seen, you know, just billions unaccounted for, billions, hundreds of millions that they've already admitted to having overcharged or intentionally fraudulently charged the government. And, you know, it's just this is what comes along when your main job is to increase profits. And you know that your job security and your future depends on that, not on whether the laundry gets done right. It's the Tom Hartman Program, 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The war in Iraq has provided doctors with something they don't normally see. A huge number of young, healthy Americans with devastating injuries. For every soldier killed in combat, many more are injured, losing an arm, leg, or multiple limbs. At Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C., doctors have fit more than 100 soldiers with technologically sophisticated artificial limbs, some costing as much as $150,000. Congress is expected to approve $10 million for construction of a new amputee care center at Walter Reed Hospital.
The success of the United Auto Workers when it comes to unionizing Japanese car factories in America has been less than stellar, but hopefully with a nudge from their counterparts in Japan, more progress can be made. The president of Japan's largest auto workers union says he's recently begun pressuring Japan's largest automakers, including Nissan and Toyota, to lessen their resistance to union organizing drives at U.S. factories. The UAW will still fight an uphill battle at many plants, though, as most are located in southern states, where so-called right-to-work laws make it more difficult to organize a union workplace.
Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry endorsed a $1.85 minimum wage hike on Friday, saying that it would significantly fatten American workers' paychecks. The lowest wage for U.S. workers hasn't risen for 7 years, since it became $5.15 per hour in 1997. Kerry told invited attendees at Northern Virginia Community College raising the minimum wage would give 7.4 million people who make less than $7 an hour in the United States enough extra money to buy 10 months worth of groceries.
The results of a preliminary investigation by the acting inspector general of the U.S. Treasury accuse IBM of manipulating government data in a policy debate over pension. IBM lobbyists allegedly circulated a list of talking points against legislation that would have prevented companies from shortchanging long-term employees if they changed their pensions from a defined benefit to a cash balance plan. The legislation failed. Officially, the Treasury Department took no position on the bill, yet there's evidence Treasury's top lawyers may have worked with IBM assisting with its lobbying efforts. A final report is expected in August. No criminal charges have yet been filed.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. America's race gap extends from birth through old age. Researchers at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation looked at 14,000 nursing homes in the United States that individually accept 85% of their residents from Medicare and found a wide racial disparity in the quality of their care. Compared to whites, African Americans are more than four times as likely to be placed in homes that are short-staffed and run down. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fair
fearlessly exploring the truth of the day. Here's Tom Hartman.
Hello, and welcome back. I don't know what happened to that piece of bumper music, but anyhow, here we are. George Bush understands that most Americans don't have the time, energy, or interest necessary to keep up with current events. How else can we explain the paradox of his expanding claims of close connections between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein in the 9/11 Commission's statement on the day, on the same day that there were no connections? An interesting topic. I'd like to explore a little bit. First, let's go to the phones. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Hey, Roberta. Roberta in New Mexico, in Santa Fe.
Greetings, Tom. Oh, welcome back.
Thank you.
Oh, it seemed like a long time you were gone. My curiosity really arose with the question about deists. It might track with something I'm reading about Rousseau, but I always thought deists were just people who had a generic faith in God. And you brought up the Mason thing. Were all Masons deists? I mean, were all deists Masons?
I don't have any idea.
I just wondered if, you know...
I doubt it. I think within the Masonic movement, today's Masons and the Masons of the 1700s are probably quite different, too. So it's just an area I don't know that much about, frankly.
Well, I think there are two sects of Masons. But it does track with conspiracy somewhat because, well, what I'm wondering now, I noticed with Hitler, the faith in God was very much anti-Christ. They ridiculed the fact that Christ was the Son of God. And you mentioned that Jefferson did not believe that Christ was the Son of God, but an ordained prophet. And, of course, that tracks with the Judaic belief as well. And I'm wondering, were the deists also, in fact, you know, the Nazis were absolutely, they ridiculed Christ.
Well, in some ways. I mean, you know.
So were the deists, were they also, was part of their faith to not believe in Christ?
Well, I think, again, I'm not an expert on deism, but I have read extensively, of Jefferson's correspondences where he talks about his concern about religion. He took the New Testament and rewrote it. It's still in print, actually. It's called the Jefferson Bible. And basically, he took out all of the miracles. I mean, he thought...
Well, Elizabeth Cady Stanton did that, too. She wrote the Bible from a women's viewpoint.
Yeah,
you know, this all occurred at a time when all of the intellectual... from Europe were fighting against the Catholic Church because the Catholic Church was a political entity and had so much power.
Yeah.
The divine right of kings was a dichotomy there.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to question and say, au contraire, mon ami, to your statement that corporations were just fine, I would say they are not because when their profit motive becomes the priority in the system and is so detrimental to the common good. I do not think that corporations profitizing can be considered benign in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you, Roberta. My position is that corporations, up until the 1880s, corporations had to have as their first statement of purpose to serve the public good. And I believe that we need to return to that. That if you want to make money, you want to run a business, and it serves the public good, all to the better. You know, God bless you. That's a great thing. But my point, I guess my larger point is that I don't see the corporate form or free enterprise or even capitalism for that matter as inherently evil or wrong. You know, in fact, I see them as tremendous forces for potential forces for good, but they have to be constrained. It's just like saying, football's a lousy game, baseball's a better game, whatever. No game, unless it's played by appropriate rules, is going to work. It's just, and with regard to your mention of the Nazis, Hitler was an initiate into the Thule Society, T-H-U-L-E, which was an occult society that was largely drew a lot of their teachings from Madame Blavatsky and the Theosophists and the writings of Manly Hall, but mostly Madame Blavatsky, who had I don't know if she invented or reinterpreted the word Aryan, but she came up with this concept of the five root races and all this kind of thing. And Hitler developed that extensively. But he called for a new Christianity, and Hitler used Christianity, and the Nazis used Christianity, the promotion of Christianity, aggressively. And the Christians, of course, that they were largely opposed to were the Catholics, but the Protestants, by and large, particularly those who went along with them, were just fine from their point of view. Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. In fact, they were allies in many, and perhaps if not most cases. I remember Pastor Niemeyer, I believe it was. He was a Lutheran pastor. His letter, first they came for, and so on. Anyhow, Dave in Humboldt County's on the line. Hey, Dave, what's up?
Hey, good morning, Tom. I had read of Washington's brand of deism, which was a logic that grabbed me. That he had always written God with a small g, and it was his way of saying there was a God, but God died or went away.
No, I don't think he subscribed to who was the philosopher. who said God is dead? It wasn't. I'm drawing a blank. Anyhow, I don't think that Washington subscribed to that. Although it's interesting, Jefferson in a letter to Benjamin Rush. Was a good friend of Jefferson's. He was the guy who ultimately reconciled Jefferson and Adams. Talked about how the pastors had tried throughout Washington's presidency to get him to work the phrase Christianity into any of his public pronouncements, and he consistently refused to. With one single exception, at the very end of his presidency, when he acknowledged the benign influence of the Christian religion, that was the quote, and that was sort of his. But Jefferson.
Well, they addressed the logic that if the world was to improve, if man was to progress, it would be man's own effort that would do it. He kind of referred to what in today's world would be all the war, the starvation, the killing, the disease, the plague, without any intervention to improve it. And if there was a creator that could intervene and do something about it but didn't, then mankind really had an obligation to turn away from such a force.
And thanks for making the point, Dave. And I think that we have to acknowledge also that the founders, who were the deists or deists, were very tolerant of the various forms of Christianity that were around, and in fact respectful of many of them. And at the same time, they were also very concerned about some of them, because keep in mind, this was just not that far after the Salem witch trials. And, Ben Franklin, when he was 17 years old, this would have been in the early 1700s, fled Boston at the age of 17 because it was essentially run as a theocracy. And there was the public floggings and things for religious crimes, for doing things on Sunday, for example, for working on the Sabbath, and so there was concern. I mean, the United States, what is now the United States, that part of North America, had seen, particularly up in the north, particularly in Massachusetts, had seen this explosion of Taliban-like fundamentalist Christianity, and so. That was one of, I think, one of the things that really drove them to try to put in this separation of church and state, but they weren't, and I hope the message that you're carrying away from this is not that they were anti-Christian, because they weren't. Those who were the deists. I mean, many of the founders were Christians as well, but it wasn't so much an anti as a this was just what they thought. Anyhow, here we have the situation where George Bush, the 9/11 Commission, comes out and says there was no meaningful contact, no collaborative relationship is the phrase, no collaborative relationship between Al Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. In other words, they never did business together. Now. Here's the story from Yahoo News. You know, George Bush's law just grows bigger and bigger. George Bush understands that most Americans don't have the time, energy, or interest necessary to keep up with current events. How else can we explain the paradox of his expanding claims of close connections between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein and the 9/11 Commission statement on the same day that there were none? According to Reuters, Bush sent email today, this was on the 18th of June, claiming that, quote, 9/11 Commission staff report confirms administration's views of Iraq al-Qaeda ties, end quote. This came just hours after the 9/11 Commission reported that there was no evidence of a collaborative relationship. This, of course, is the commission that Bush never wanted, another one of his flip-flops. He even refused to appear before them unless he could have Dick Cheney with him, and he had an assurance that whatever he said, A, was not under oath, and B, would not be transcribed, and C, would not be recorded. Reuters offers an explanation of Bush's apparent blindness to the commission's conclusions. He is, quote, this from Reuters, employing a common campaign tactic, shaping public perception through repetition, end quote. Which is another way of saying, repeat the lie often enough and you shape public perception. In other words, you cause people to believe it. And, you know, Cheney, of course, also participating in this. Cheney goes on TV this weekend and he says, we know that there was connections between al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. Well, yeah, I mean, we know that there was an attempt. There was, you know, it's very, you know, very straightforward. There was... See, this is of semantics. I mean, you know, al-Qaeda had sent somebody to Iraq and tried to cut a deal and tried to get Saddam involved in what they were doing. And basically, he rebuffed them. He said no. Just, you know, very simple. And then Cheney goes on TV this weekend and says, oh, no. And repeats this thing about, Cheney also continued to cite, this is from the New York Times, Cheney also continued to cite a disputed report that Mohammed Atta, a ringleader of the hijacking plot, met in April 2001 in Prague with senior Iraqi intelligence officers, or an officer, raising the possibility of a direct tie between Iraq and the 9/11 attacks. But the commission staff not only found that didn't happen, that the report of the meeting was made up, and that Mohammed Atta was definitely in Florida in April taking flight training lessons. So, I mean, you know, it's been totally discredited for well over almost 2 years now. And yet Cheney is still citing it. And you know, you ask why? You know, why would this be? And here's Keene, you know, the former Republican governor of New Jersey. I mean, he's the head of the commission, Commissioner Keene, a Republican. And, you know, and during the hearings, you know, you could see, I mean, he would always, you know, throw the softball questions and like that. You know, he's not terribly partisan, but nonetheless. When the New York Times called him up and said, you know, Dick Cheney is still saying that there was a connection between al-Qaeda and Saddam, he said he was, quote, very disappointed, end quote, and was concerned that if the White House had not shared intelligence information about al-Qaeda with the commission. So the New York Times called Cheney's spokesman and said, you know, does he have any information he's willing to share with anybody? I mean, you know, the CIA, the 9/11 Commission. I mean, it can be done in secret so they can amend their report. Or how about, you know, with us, with the New York Times? And Cheney's spokesman, Kevin Kellums, declined to comment. And what they're doing is they're saying that this is a semantic difference. While characterizing any differences between the commission and the White House on the issue as largely semantic, Lee Hamilton, this is the Democratic former House member from Indiana and former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. I think he's being very charitable here. He says that the committee has no credible evidence of any collaborative relationship, period. But the White official said the White House letter did not seek any changes in... Oh, and they submitted the report, by the way, which said this. that there was no connection between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein. They submitted this report to the White House before releasing it to the public, this portion of the report. And the White House actually asked certain parts of it to be redacted, and they were. We don't know what those parts were. But the portion of the report that said, and I quote, "There is no credible evidence that Iraq and Al-Qaeda cooperated on attacks against the United States," end quote, and that, quote, "Iraq had rebuffed or ignored Al-Qaeda's requests for help from Baghdad in the 1990s, was not challenged by the White House. So the White House reads the report and says, yeah, this is true. And then they go on TV. You know, this is the on-the-record stuff. You know, you got to do it. It's got to be truthful or you end up like Bill Clinton, you know, being prosecuted for telling a lie under oath, you know, in official capacity. And yet then they go on TV. And the New York Times notes, advisors to the White House said Mr. Bush and Mr. Cheney would continue to be aggressive in countering the commission's conclusions, because failing to do so would undermine their credibility and their rationale for taking the country to war. Well, what about the truth? I mean, you know, credibility is fine and having a rationale for taking the country to war is fine, but how about the truth? The Bush campaign and the Republican National Committee sent email messages to supporters highlighting comments by Mr. Keene and Mr. Hamilton on Thursday, suggesting that they saw no big gulf between the White House's position and the commission. Right, they're both saying that Al-Qaeda came to Saddam and there were contacts. But the commission says, and Saddam told him to get out of town. And Cheney is going, oh, there were contacts. That's important. In fact, one outside advisor of the White House said the administration expects the debate over Iraq's ties to Al-Qaeda to be a regular feature of the presidential campaign. Curiouser and curiouser. 10 minutes before the hour.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month for second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's The Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Collicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
Researchers in California study the fallout from a basically clean source of energy. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Some utility companies generate electricity at wind farms that use modern windmills and electric turbines. In general, this is a clean source of energy, but some wind farms kill a lot of birds every year, and no one knows for sure how that happens or how to stop it. Brian Walton runs a research group that studies predatory birds at the University of California in Santa Cruz. The research operation recently received a $2 million grant from the California Energy Commission to study bird mortalities at the state's wind farms. One large complex near San Francisco has 7,000 turbines, and hundreds of birds die there every year. The mortalities include about 50 golden eagles a year, and Walton says they're hard to explain.
You know, when you go through a wind farm and you find a dead eagle, it's very difficult to say if it landed on a telephone pole and got electrocuted, if it flew into a wire and broke its neck, or if it flew off of a wind turbine at night when the wind started blowing and crashed into the turbine and killed itself. All you do is find a dead bird.
Walton says scientists need to find specific causes for these mortalities to prevent them in the future.
You know, we all need power, and we're not going to have this industry go away. Nobody wants to suggest that. And ironically, the wind turbine is usually considered a green or, you know, positive energy thing. So everybody's trying to find a way to reduce the damage caused to predatory birds because it's generally considered ecologically a good thing.
Eagles and other predatory birds search for food while they soar on air currents. That means they often inhabit windy terrain that's also prime real estate for installations of wind turbines. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
You know, some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. And other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, don't grumble, give a whistle. This'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life.
Oh, great advice. There's got to be something good that comes out of everything. Yeah, there has to be. It just has to be. Here we have, even now, the administration, they've taken a few blows on this thing. And I find it fascinating they're out there saying, no, Iraq really, was Saddam really was involved with Osama, blah, 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 or implying this. I mean, they're not ever saying that Saddam and Osama had any relationship. And they're not ever saying that Iraq had anything to do with 9/11. They keep saying, oh, we know that there were contacts, there were repeated contacts. And over a period of a decade or more, there were a few contacts, and the contacts always resulted in a negative result for al-Qaeda. That is, Saddam basically said, get out of town. You know, he's running a secular government. He doesn't want any religious fanatics there. He doesn't want to participate with them. And it's well documented and not in dispute. So instead, they take this, kind of partial truth and keep repeating it over and over and over again. Well, there were contacts. You know, they did have contacts. Yeah. And which means, the original reason why we couldn't wait another for the extra month that Hans Blix and France and Germany and Russia and the other members of the Security Council were asking for to determine if Iraq actually represented a threat to the United States or anybody else. The reason, Bush says, that he had to make the decision to preemptively go to war without a United Nations resolution authorizing it, in actual violation of 1440, which said that the consequences could only be invoked if the inspector, Blix, said that there was clear evidence of threat, and Blix was explicit that there was not. The argument that they've made is that, you know, there were these weapons of mass destruction. Well, then David Kay came along and said, well, we were all wrong. There were no weapons of mass destruction. So now they're saying, oh, well, it's because he's tied into Al-Qaeda. Well, if that's going to be their reason, I mean, first of all, we know it's not true. But secondly, if that's the reason they're going to try and sell to America, then how come we haven't bombed Saudi Arabia? I mean, that's where Al-Qaeda is based. Or Pakistan. Where Osama's living right now, or Iran. I mean, it's a long list. But, you know, whatever sells. It's Tom Hartman with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available at bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The war in Iraq has provided doctors with something they don't normally see. A huge number of young, healthy Americans with devastating injuries. For every soldier killed in combat, many more are injured, losing an arm, leg, or multiple limbs. At Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C., doctors have fit more than 100 soldiers with technologically sophisticated artificial limbs, some costing as much as $150,000. Congress is expected to approve $10 million for construction of a new amputee care center at Walter Reed Hospital.
The success of the United Auto Workers when it comes to unionizing Japanese car factories in America has been less than stellar, but hopefully with a nudge from their counterparts in Japan, more progress can be made. The president of Japan's largest auto workers union says he's recently begun pressuring Japan's largest automakers, including Nissan and Toyota, to lessen their resistance to union organizing drives at U.S. factories. The UAW will still fight an uphill battle at many plants, though, as most are located in southern states, where so-called right-to-work laws make it more difficult to organize a union workplace.
Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry endorsed a $1.85 minimum wage hike on Friday, saying that it would significantly fatten American workers' paychecks. The lowest wage for U.S. workers hasn't risen for 7 years, since it became $5.15 per hour in 1997. Kerry told invited attendees at Northern Virginia Community College raising the minimum wage would give 7.4 million people who make less than $7 an hour in the United States enough extra money to buy 10 months' worth of groceries.
The results of a preliminary investigation by the Acting Inspector General of the U.S. Treasury accuse IBM of manipulating government data in a policy debate over pension. IBM lobbyists allegedly circulated a list of talking points against legislation that would have prevented companies from shortchanging long-term employees if they changed their pensions from a defined benefit to a cash balance plan. The legislation failed. Officially, the Treasury Department took no position on the bill, yet there's evidence Treasury's top lawyers may have worked with IBM assisting with its lobbying efforts. A final report is expected in August. No criminal charges have yet been filed.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. America's race gap extends from birth through old age. Researchers at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation looked at 14,000 nursing homes in the United States that individually accept 85% of their residents from Medicare and found a wide racial disparity in the quality of their care. Compared to whites, African Americans are more than four times as likely to be placed in homes that are short-staffed and run down. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
Martha Stewart has a plan. Of course she has a plan. The multi-million-dollar maven of how to live the affluent lifestyle always has a plan. Whether it's a plan for gold-leafing walnut shells to use as individual caviar cups at your next dinner party, or a plan to dump her shares of M-Clone Inc. just before the price crashed, Martha is always ready. As she approaches the prospect of spending a bit of time in the federal pokey for her conviction in that insider stock dumping scheme, she already has a plan to lighten her jail term. She's proposed that she get good time credit, thus shortening her sentence, by helping underprivileged women. How? By cleaning their apartments? Sewing new clothes for their children? No, no, darling. By teaching poor women how to start their own businesses. One wonders, will her course include an ethics lecture? After her term, Martha might follow the path blazed by Walter Pavlow, a former top executive of MCI. He spent a year and a half in prison after being convicted of wire fraud and money laundering. With an outside partner, it seems that Walter had devised a convoluted accounting scheme so he could loot $6 million from MCI customers. Bad boy. But being bad, at least for white-collar criminals, can put you in demand on the corporate lecture circuit. Ex-con Walter, for example, was recently the featured speaker at UC Berkeley's Center for Responsible Business. Walter pulls down $5,000 a speech and expects to take in up to $200,000 this year, telling audiences just how bad he was. There's even a speakers bureau called Pros and Cons that specializes in marketing such corporate crime confessors as Walter. I'm sure they'd welcome Martha. This is Jim Hightower saying, the lesson here is clear. If you're going to be a criminal, be a white-collar one. The after-prison gigs are a lot better.
As a small business owner, you turn multitasking into a fine art. Because for you, doing several things all at the same time is just another day at the office. So who better than you to appreciate how Sam's Club offers the option of doing two things at once. Buying items you need for your business, while at the same time buying items you need for your home. In addition to finding what you need for your business, you'll find name brand electronics, sporting goods, and fine jewelry, as well as many of the everyday essentials every home needs. When you shop at Sam's Club, you get the same everyday low cost on items for your home as you do on items for your business. And when you're really pressed for time, try using Click and Pull and Fax and Pull, convenient services to help you order ahead for fast pickup. Place your order at samsclub.com or by fax before 5 p.m. And at no extra charge, it's ready to pick up the next morning. You've got a lot going on. Count on us to help you get it done. Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. It's the 21st of June, Monday. 7 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our telephone number, toll-free, 1-866-889-8894. Should you be interested in calling? Did you know that we have not just one concentration camp now in the United States, but over a dozen?
extraordinary story. This was first published in the Scotsman, but it's been in other news sources. The United States has at least a dozen secretive detention centers around the world holding suspects in the, quote, war on terror, end quote, a human rights group reported tonight. Known sites like Guantanamo Bay in Cuba and Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan are complemented by a network of jails in Jordan and Pakistan and by prison ships at sea. The group Human Rights First, formerly known as the Lawyers Committee for Human Rights, said the detention centers were, quote, beyond the reach of adequate supervision, accountability, or law, end quote. They called for the secretive practices to stop and for the International Committee of the Red Cross to be given immediate access to those in custody. The U.S. Congress and the Red Cross should be told of the secret locations, they said. Even the Congress doesn't... I mean, this is... You know, Bush is invoking the divine right of kings here. The group also appealed for the families of detainees to be informed of their loved ones' whereabouts, legal status, and condition of health. Such secrecy, they say, makes inappropriate detention and abuse not only likely but inevitable. It also puts American soldiers at risk of being tortured if captured in hostile locations, the group warned. Quote, the United States practices in its global network of detention facilities also has a deeply negative effect on the U.S. ability to combat the threat of terrorism, which depends critically on a visible demonstration that the U.S. deeds match its words in supporting democracy and human rights. This is the thing that, you know, the cons just, you know, it's just constantly... Oh, well, they cut off this guy's head. They cut off that guy's head. These people have no respect for rights. Why should we worry about the fact that we just beat up a few of them or smeared poop on them or whatever? Well, it's because we're the ones who say you shouldn't do that kind of stuff. And if we really want to be in the business of creating a world where that kind of thing doesn't happen, then we shouldn't be doing it. I mean, isn't that... pretty easily understood? Apparently not. I mean, you know, clearly the right-wing talk machine, the Hannitys and Limbaughs and whatnot, the faux news, you know, clearly they don't get it. They don't get it that America has a role, has taken on a role from the founding of this country in many regards to be... You know, it's an idealistic thing, granted. But you know, it's a lot of us take it seriously. And a lot of people have fought and died for it. And that is the notion that the United States really is a beacon of liberty. And yeah, I know we've screwed up a lot in a lot of ways, but we've also done a lot of good in the world. The kind of world you make is the kind of world you get. That's the bottom line. On top of this, now Time Magazine reports that we all know about the report from Major General Anthony Taguba. Did you know that there were parts of it that were not released because they were classified? Apparently, Time magazine has gotten a hold of pieces of this. And three interrogators were cited for violations of military law in their handling of two females, ages 17 and 18. And one plaintiff... Now, there's a class action suit now filed in California on behalf of former detainees. One plaintiff, identified only as Nasif, claims that after he was taken from his home on the outskirts of Baghdad last November to Abu Ghraib prison, Americans made him disrobe and attached electrical wires to his genitals. He claims he was shocked three times, although a vein in his penis ruptured and he had blood in his urine. He says he was refused medical attention. And this has actually, you know, become a legal case now. USA Today reports Again, this is not, you know, this is not the you know, the fringe, the conspiracy theorists, the whatever you want to call it, you know, the folks that the, you know, the mainstream America and certainly the right like to easily dismiss. It's just a plain old stand-up, straightforward reporting in USA Today by Tom Scutari and Dave Moniz. More than a third of the prisoners who died in U.S. custody in Iraq and Afghanistan were shot, strangled, or beaten by U.S. personnel before they died, according to death certificates and a high-ranking U.S. military official. 15 of 37 prisoners who have died since December 2002 appear to have been killed by U.S. troops or interrogators. And then they go through some of the details. For example, 6 prisoners died from blunt force trauma or excessive force on the part of captors or prison guards, including 2 within a week and 1 of within a week of each other at the same prison. 2 prisoners at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan died of complications December 3rd and December 10th, 2002, after being struck forcefully on their legs by guards or interrogators, military records show. 1 death certificate said the leg beating complicated coronary artery disease, and the other certificate said the bleeding led to a pulmonary embolism or an artery blockage in the lung that causes a blood clot. At least 4 prisoners died in Iraq from strangulation, asphyxia, smothering, or compromised respiration, including Abid Mawash, who was a major general and who headed Iraq's air defenses, whose death certificate says that he died from asphyxia due to smothering, which was the result of chest compression. You've seen pictures of them where they take the prisoner and put them between two cots, tie them together, and sit on them. And apparently this guy... So... And now why? Why? Well, as Brigadier General Janis Karpinski told the BBC, Major General Jeffrey Miller, who was the former deputy commander for detainee operations in Iraq, and who prior to that had been the chief jailer at the U.S. concentration camp at Guantanamo Bay, visited her last year and told her, and this is a quote from a one-star general, Janis Karpinski. She said that he told her the detainees had to be dominated. He said, quote, this is General Miller, "They are like dogs, and if you allow them to believe at any time they are anything more than a dog, then you've lost control of them." End quote. And so what brings this about? Well, some suggest it comes from the top down. Interestingly, George Bush, report here out of New York, BMJ.com. George Bush plans to screen whole U.S. population for mental illness. A sweeping mental health initiative will be unveiled by President George W. Bush next month in July. While some praise the plan's goals, others say that the whole point of the thing is to make more money for the drug companies. Now, if you can find more crazy people and help them. The crazy people, that's a terrible. People who are, you know, whatever, not functioning, who couldn't be helped with medication. I'd say in the crazy people, I put the category of the neocons, but that would be an insult to crazy people. Anyhow, schools, wrote the commissioner, are in a key position to screen the 52 million students and 6 million adults who work at the schools. This is based on a project that they did in Texas. It was called the Texas Medication Algorithm Project. It's the model upon which this thing is based. But the Texas project, which promotes the use of newer, more expensive antidepressants and antipsychotic drugs, sparked off controversy when Alan Jones, an employee of the Pennsylvania Office of the Inspector General, revealed that key officials with influence over the medication plan in his state receive money and perks from drug companies
with a stake in this thing. For example, Zyprexa, olanzapine. It's one of the atypical antipsychotic drugs recommended as a first-line drug in the Texas algorithm. In other words, it was one of the drugs that when they found people that they said, this person is mentally ill, give them this drug. This was the most commonly prescribed drug. Zyprexa. This drug grossed $4.28 billion worldwide in 2003. It's Eli Lilly's top-selling drug. 70% of the sales of this drug in the United States are paid for by government agencies. Now, interestingly, Eli Lilly, the manufacturer of it, has multiple ties to the Bush administration. George Bush Sr. was a member of the board of directors of Eli Lilly. Bush Jr. appointed Lilly's CEO, Sidney Taurel, to a seat on the Homeland Security Council. And Lilly made over $1.6 million in political contributions in 2000, 82% of which went to Bush. Jones points out that the companies that helped start up the Texas Project have been and still are big contributors to the election funds of George W. Bush. There really is a time to separate the profit motive from the let's do something good motive. I mean, there really is a time for that separation to take place. And, I think it's a laudable goal to try to help people who are mentally ill. It's, you know, when Ronald Reagan basically deinstitutionalized people in the United States to save money, you know, the beginning of the rollback of the Great Society programs. And suddenly we had all these homeless people on the streets who were, in many cases, schizophrenic. It was a tragedy. It was an absolute tragedy. And going back and identifying those people and helping them out might be a fine thing, but to bring in a drug company, this is where it breaks down. 20 minutes past the hour. It's Tom Hartman with you. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
During the past 3 years, it's true George W. Bush has created more jobs. Unfortunately, they were created in places like China. Bush's policies have encouraged the loss of nearly 3 million jobs. He supported tax breaks to corporations that ship jobs overseas. George W. Bush is taking our country in the wrong direction. It's time to make America work for every American.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And I don't know if this show would work in England or not, in the United Kingdom. If I might be censured for frothing at the mouth, it's certainly what happened to Fox News. Ofcom, O-F-C-O-M, is the British governmental agency that licenses commercial channels shown in Britain, regardless of where they're based. So, you know, if you put a satellite above England and beam a signal down to them, you have to be licensed by Ofcom. And, I don't know what the acronym stands for, but office or something. Anyhow, Fox News has been found in breach of British broadcasting rules for an on-air tirade that accused the BBC of, quote, frothing at the mouth anti-Americanism, end quote. Television regulators said the broadcaster failed to show, quote, respect for truth, end quote. Fox, I mean, the British are just stunned by this. Fox News failed to show respect for truth. In a ruling published yesterday, it described the offending item as a damning critique. This is the third time, by the way, that British regulators have ruled against Fox News in the past year. This particular offense was created, was done by John Gibson, a Fox presenter, in a segment entitled My Word, that the BBC had a, quote, frothing at the mouth anti-Americanism that was obsessive, irrational, and dishonest, that the BBC felt entitled to lie, and when caught lying, felt entitled to defend its lying reporters and executives, end quote. And went on to say that the BBC reporter Andrew Gilligan in Baghdad during the U.S. invasion had, quote, insisted on air that the Iraqi army was heroically repulsing an incompetent American military, and, quote, that the BBC, far from blaming itself, insisted its reporter had the right to lie, exaggerate, because, well, the BBC knew that the war was wrong, and anything they could say to underscore the point had to be right, end quote. Of course, you know, none of that is true. I mean, this is the problem, see? I mean, you know, this guy goes on Fox and he accuses Andrew Gilligan, he accuses BBC of
saying that the Iraqi army was heroically repulsing the incompetent American army? Ofcom said Fox had breached the program code in three areas, failing to honor the respect for truth rule, failing to give the BBC an opportunity to respond, and failing to apply the rule that says in a personal view section, opinions expressed must not rest upon false evidence. You know, it's just fascinating. See, they don't have in the United Kingdom, and in most of the world, they don't have our equivalent of the Bill of Rights. There is not absolute freedom of the press, and of course we're seeing here freedom of the press being eroded by corporate power, but not so much by governmental power. In fact, in 1987. Or 86 or 87, forget which year, when the Fairness Doctrine was done away with, paving the way for Rush Limbaugh, and for this program, for that matter. I think we took a step in the direction of more openness and discourse in our public airwaves. And the British are really not up for that. They really, there's this kind of old school notion in England that if you're on the public airwaves, you should tell the truth. You have an obligation to, in fact. And they take it very seriously. It might be a good idea. In fact, it might be a great idea. Or maybe we should have the right to lie. I personally come down on the side of people should have the right to lie. 29 minutes past the hour, it's the Tom Hartman program where we actually do try to tell the truth. Stick around, be right back.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Halliwell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. The war in Iraq has provided doctors with something they don't normally see. A huge number of young, healthy Americans with devastating injuries. For every soldier killed in combat, many more are injured, losing an arm, leg, or multiple limbs. At Walter Reed Hospital in Washington, D.C., doctors have fit more than 100 soldiers with technologically sophisticated artificial limbs, some costing as much as $150,000. Congress is expected to approve $10 million for construction of a new amputee care center at Walter Reed Hospital.
The success of the United Auto Workers when it comes to unionizing Japanese car factories in America has been less than stellar, but hopefully with a nudge from their counterparts in Japan, more progress can be made. The president of Japan's largest auto workers union says he's recently begun pressuring Japan's largest automakers, including Nissan and Toyota, to lessen their resistance to union organizing drives at U.S. factories. The UAW will still fight an uphill battle at many plants, though, as most are located in southern states, where so-called right-to-work laws make it more difficult to organize a union workplace.
Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry endorsed a $1.85 minimum wage hike on Friday, saying that it would significantly fatten American workers' paychecks. The lowest wage for U.S. workers hasn't risen for 7 years, since it became $5.15 per hour in 1997. Kerry told invited attendees at Northern Virginia Community College raising the minimum wage would give 7.4 million people who make less than $7 an hour in the United States enough extra money to buy 10 months worth of groceries.
The results of a preliminary investigation by the Acting Inspector General of the U.S. Treasury accuse IBM of manipulating government data in a policy debate over pension. IBM lobbyists allegedly circulated a list of talking points against legislation that would have prevented companies from shortchanging long-term employees if they changed their pensions from a defined benefit to a cash balance plan. The legislation failed. Officially, the Treasury Department took no position on the bill, yet there's evidence Treasury's top lawyers may have worked with IBM assisting with its lobbying efforts. A final report is expected in August. No criminal charges have yet been filed.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. America's race gap extends from birth through old age. Researchers at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation looked at 14,000 nursing homes in the United States that individually accept 85% of their residents from Medicare and found a wide racial disparity in the quality of their care. Compared to whites, African Americans are more than four times as likely to be placed in homes that are short-staffed and run down. You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I want to love you again.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 27 minutes before the hour. See, the theory behind that fairness, just to wrap that thing up, the theory behind the fairness doctrine here in the United States was that if we, the people, are going to license the airwaves to companies, to for-profit organizations, in order to convey, and you know, to make a living, to make money, then they have a certain obligation to serve the public, and there were certain requirements. The Fairness Doctrine was not the only thing that was repealed. There were requirements that radio stations run public service announcements, and so you know they had a certain number of minutes every hour that they would set aside for PSAs, where they would talk about community events, or they would run a show. Every day, call-in shows about the community and community events. And there was this pervasive notion that if you were going to show or tell one side of an issue, that you had an obligation to show or tell the other side of the issue. That assuming, of course, that there were two sides to most issues, and then the reality is that most issues have probably 20 or 50 sides, but nonetheless, that was the prevailing notion from, I think it was 1934, when the Federal Communications Commission was first created. I might be wrong. It might have been earlier than that, but I believe it was 34. From then until 1986 or 87, and when we basically took our hands off. And now, again, the FCC is coming back and saying, well, no, now we've decided again that we do have an obligation to protect the public. Now that Howard Stern has started criticizing President Bush, and isn't it ironic that the FCC's attack on Stern came literally the week after Stern made his first attack on Bush? Howard Stern has been, fairly conservative guy most of his life, politically. Far more Republican than Democratic in most regards. And had been a supporter of George Bush's. And, a few months ago, he came to the conclusion that the whole Iraqi thing was a mess and a misadventure and that Bush had lied us into it and had the audacity to say so on the air and started criticizing George Bush for it, saying he thought he was the worst president we ever had. All of a sudden, the FCC decides that based on a show that Stern did a couple of years ago, that, he should be hit with these huge fines. And Clear Channel knocks him off the air on every one of their stations in Florida, one of the contested states. And so, are we moving back in the direction of that? I don't know. But I think without some clear doctrine, some clear, it's just, you just can't, the FCC is just being altogether too arbitrary about this. It's just, it's not right in my opinion. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to opine 24 minutes before the hour. Chris in New Mexico's on the air, on the line. Hey, Chris, you're on the air. What's up?
Well, thank you. Yeah, my favorite place to opine, certainly.
There you go.
I agree with you to a certain degree in that everyone should have the right to lie. Where we might diverge paths is where you present a clear untruth as news, because then it becomes propaganda. And in a democracy, then it begins to shape public policy. And I think that that's wrong.
I agree that it's wrong, but we have been doing that since 1798, when John Adams used the XYZ Affair, which was largely made up. He took this little event over in France and turned it into an international incident and used that as one of the primary rationales to push through the Alien and Sedition Acts. I mean, there's a long history to this.
Well, no, and I understand that, and you can go to the Tonkin event and just keep on, you know, all throughout history.
Yeah. So if you're gonna require that news be truthful, I mean, where do you stop?
That's a good point. I just wanted to say that, you know, when Fox News does that, and they do it so often and so egregiously, when they actually just spout untruths, and then there are a great many freckled morons out there that take it as gospel, it affects the way people vote, and I think it's harmful to democracy. I really do. I don't know what you could do about it, but I don't agree.
Yeah, well, you know, see, this is the great conundrum of democracy, Chris, is that you know, I forget who said it, you know, was it Patrick Henry or somebody, you know, I disagree strongly with what you say, but I will defend to the death your right to say it.
Yeah.
This conundrum, I mean, Fox, for example, there was a Fox-owned television station down in Florida some 4 years ago, I believe, that had a couple of reporters, a husband-wife team. She was an anchor person, and he was a reporter, as I recall, Jane Aker and Steve Wilson. And they did a really good and thorough investigative report on the effects of bovine growth hormone in cows and the consequence of that getting, and you know, whether or not this actually got into the milk and whether it actually got into people,
yeah,
and you know, whether this was healthy for people or was dangerous and all this kind of stuff. And Monsanto got word of it and talked to the folks at Fox, and Fox required them to alter their story. And they went through, as I recall, some 70 revisions of the story, trying to, you know, pulling back from this statement, pulling back, until it finally reached the point where Wilson and Akers said that Fox was telling them to lie, just a plain old flat-out lie. And they refused to do it. And Fox fired them for refusing to lie on the air. And they sued for wrongful termination in Florida state courts, and the court ruled unanimously, a six-person jury of their peers unanimously ruled that Fox had, it was wrong to fire a reporter for refusing to lie in the news, and awarded them $300,000 in back pay, and so Fox then appealed that to the federal district court.
Right.
And the federal district court, by a 2-3 vote, two of the appointees being Republican appointees, one being a Democrat, whether or not that's relevant, I don't know. But the federal appeals court said, no, there is no specific prohibition in the FCC law or in any other law that they could find that requires that the news be truthful, even if you assert that it's truthful. And therefore, Fox has every right to lie, and every right to fire an employee who refuses to lie on the air. And Fox released a news release after this decision. I mean, this was 2 years ago, saying that they've been vindicated. And you know, there's a whole website about this stuff. I mean, you know, if you type Jane Aker, Akre, I think is how it's spelled, and Steve Wilson into Google, I mean, you'll find all the information. So, you know,
in other words, my conundrum can beat up your conundrum any day.
Yeah, well, see, I mean, that's the tough thing. I mean, you know, this is like, you know, Jefferson saying, to Adams saying, you know, I'm not willing to trust the rabble. I'm not, you know, and this was the big debate in the early days. Why only of the four divisions of government, you know, the three branches and the four divisions, the judiciary, the executive, and then the two divisions of Congress, you know, the Senate and the House, that only one of those four was originally elected by the people, that being the House of Representatives. The president was to be elected by electors who were presumably wise local people who would make independent decisions, so you would vote for an elector and trust his judgment. And so the president was going to be decided by this wise council of elders. The states appointed the Senate, the members, their two members of the United States Senate, based on any criteria they wanted. So in some states, you know, the House and Senate of the state made the appointment. In some states, it was the governor, you know, and the whole thing. And this was up until, I think, 1913 when that was repealed, and we got direct election of the Senate. And this was the debate back then, was, you know, to what extent can we just, you know, trust the people to make the right decisions? Ultimately, will the truth come out? Ultimately, will things work out if we simply, you know, take a fairly laissez-faire, hands-off approach to things?
Yep.
And of course, now you've got conservatives saying, well, of course, that's how it should be with economics, you know, leave the corporations alone. And we're seeing that there's some negative consequences to that. But I think when it comes to issues of individual liberty, it becomes much more complicated.
In a condition like we do now, wherein the executive branch division of government is attempting to envelop and make null and void the other divisions, I find it, there has to be some rule. I can't think of one off the top of my head.
Well,
there has to be some way that truth will out.
Yeah, but getting back to the Fox issue, I mean, here's really where the rubber meets the road. I mean, how is it that Fox can say to a reporter, you must lie on the air or we will fire you, and that story doesn't become a big story, okay? And this is where I see the problem not as being that the FCC should be stepping in as this agency in England does and regulating speech, but rather where I see that the media should be locally owned. In other words, I think again we're looking at a symptom rather than the problem, and that the problem is this enormous aggregation and concentration of media ownership is diminishing what was once considered a free press.
I agree.
And I think that in passing laws that allow corporations to aggregate as large as they have, particularly media corporations, specifically media corporations, in passing laws, by in Congress passing legislation that allows these huge aggregations, in my opinion, they are violating the First Amendment, which says that Congress shall pass no law limiting the freedom of the press. Because, in my opinion, the freedom of the press is you know, by definition, requires that the press be local, that, you know, that to a large extent that the press be locally owned. And I realize, you know, it's you extend that logic out and you don't have very many syndicated talk shows anymore, you know, if everything is local, or the local station can choose to carry it. But see, if all of the individual television stations in Florida, and if all of the individual newspapers in Florida, and if all of the individual radio stations in Florida had been owned by members of the local communities, as was very much the case by and large in the United States, you know, from, you know, the beginning of this country with locally owned newspapers, right up until the 60s, 70s, you know, when the network started building television stations and radio stations. But really, the consolidation occurred when Reagan suspended the enforcement of the Sherman Antitrust Act in 1981, and we saw this mergers and acquisitions frenzy, which has not abated. And that, I think, was the beginning of the end of the free press. And that is where I would attack this thing. Not at the level of let's pick on Howard Stern, but rather, let's let these decisions be made in local communities, at the level of the local community, by the press in the local community, because it's locally owned and therefore it has to answer to the local community.
Where Monsanto doesn't have veto power.
Yeah. Yeah, for example.
Have a good day, man.
Thank you, Chris. You raise a good one. It's always good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 14 minutes before the hour. Paul Krugman, of course, last week in his Travesty of Justice op-ed piece, no question, John Ashcroft is the worst attorney general in history. Talks about how before 9/11 he never mentioned terrorism, reduced funding for anti-terrorism, all that sort of stuff, and goes on and on about this. And he says, somewhere the anthrax terrorist is laughing, but the Justice Department, you'll be happy to know, is trying to determine whether it can file bioterrorism charges against a Buffalo art professor whose work includes harmless bacteria in petri dishes.
Perhaps most telling is the way Mr. Ashcroft responds to criticism of his performance. He tries to change the subject by making a dramatic announcement of a terrorist threat. And this is one that I found particularly fascinating. Here last week, and I think it was it must have been Wednesday, the day that my show got repeated, so I didn't have a chance to rant about it on the air. But Ashcroft comes out and announces, we've made an arrest in Ohio of a major, you know, Al-Qaeda, this guy Abdi. Well, it turns out he'd been arrested back last year on November 28th. And I'm telling you, these guys have got a whole bunch of them. John Ashcroft has got a whole bunch of these guys in his back pocket. And whenever the news about Abu Ghraib or the economy or Valerie Plame or whatever, whenever the news starts getting bad, John Ashcroft is going to run out and go, hey, wait, we just caught another one. Look at this guy. This is incredible. You know. It's, last week, Mr. Ashcroft, from Paul Krugman, apparently in contempt of Congress, refused to release a memo on torture that his department had prepared for the White House 2 years ago. All of a sudden, this is in the news. Big news, actually. John Ashcroft, in contempt of Congress. He could go to jail for this. The memo declares that the federal law against torture does not apply to interrogations of enemy combatants pursuant to the president's authority. In other words, the president is above the law. The memo came out late Sunday. Mr. Ashcroft called the press conference the following day to announce an indictment against a man accused of plotting to blow up a shopping mall in Ohio who had been arrested 7 months ago. The timing, Krugman points out, of course, was purely coincidental. Purely coincidental. But Daniel Ellsberg thinks perhaps not. Keep in mind, John Mitchell, who was the Attorney General under Richard Nixon, went to prison for crimes he committed as Attorney General that had to do with covering up the events of Watergate. Could John Ashcroft be facing a similar fate? This may hang on the Edmonds case. I'll tell you about that right after this. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. Tom Hartman here with you 10 minutes before the hour.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Communities and individuals improvise to fill an environmental void left by the federal government. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Gus Speth says we need action on a long list of environmental problems, but he claims the federal government has turned its back on environmental protection. Speth was an advisor to the Carter and Clinton administrations, and he's written a new book called Red Sky at Morning. He says most progress on environmental issues is being made by individuals, companies, and nonprofit groups. Speth compares their actions to musicians playing jazz.
Jazz initiatives are initiatives that people take spontaneously, voluntarily. They're bottom-up. They're not being imposed. They're improvisational. And people are doing things. Individuals, a green consumer movement is beginning to strengthen and take off. Certification of forest products and fishery products happening. Despite the fact that governments are not involved at all, it's the companies are doing it, the environmental community is pushing it, and it's beginning to take off.
Speth sees these so-called jazz initiatives in almost every walk of life. For example, the Alcoa Corporation is aggressively reducing its greenhouse gas emissions. A number of religious denominations are talking to their members about the environment. And Chicago has declared its intention to become the greenest city in the United States.
This country's acting. It's just acting at a personal level and a community level and an organizational level. It's not acting at the federal government yet, but if we keep promoting this jazz, one day it will sweep the country.
Speth says jazz initiatives offer a lot of promise for bringing about change, but he says many environmental problems are simply too big. They require the concerted effort of federal policy and regulation. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Having an interesting discussion in the chat room. Yeah, will there be an attack on the United States by Al-Qaeda? I'm of the opinion, you know, the original question in the chat room was, would it happen during the Republican National Convention? And my guess is that my take on it is that Al-Qaeda loves George Bush. He has been the best thing that ever happened to them. They went from being an obscure nutcase group that was regarded even in their own nations, even in among their own people, as lunatic fringe criminals, into martyrs and heroes for much of the Muslim world. George Bush has just done wonders for Al-Qaeda, both by his rhetoric and by, you know, this unnecessary war in Iraq. But I said my and therefore, if they want him to continue to be president, and I believe that Al-Qaeda does want George Bush to continue to be president, that they would probably attack the United States in the day, 2 days, 3 days, 4 days before the election, because that would give him a boost. I hope I'm wrong. I really hope I'm wrong.
But anyhow, two whistleblowers stood side by side before a courthouse in Washington, D.C. on Monday. Veteran of the Pentagon Papers scandal Daniel Ellsberg was backing a protest by former FBI translator Sybil Edmonds against a gag order about that which has silenced her revelations about the 9/11 attacks. She had given testimony to Congress, and Ashcroft came in and said, "Wait a minute, you know that whatever she said that is now classified." And in an exclusive interview with BreakForNews.com, Daniel Ellsberg says that Ashcroft's legal actions against Edmonds, who has become kind of a rallying cry, a rallying point for many people who are concerned about the events of 9/11 and that preceded it, says that Ashcroft's efforts, quote, clearly were intended to keep her from bringing out into public information that could lead to criminal indictments and possible convictions of major political figures. That's as in members of the administration. So, time will tell. We'll see. Wake up, folks. Spread the good word. This is Tom Hartman with you. Thanks to Louise for producing our show today. Thanks to Rama for engineering it. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music. Thanks to Shelby for our stream on audio at radiopower.org. And Ben for our archives at White Rose Society. Mike Toth for our archives on the website, tomhartman.com. Thanks to our sponsors, especially Small Dog Electronics. Please patronize them. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. And thanks to you for listening. See you here tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century's vision for America. Here's what syndicated cartoonist Ted Wall said after reading We the People.
An ambitious effort to explain everything that's wrong in America, how things got this way, and what should be done about it. We the People is the product of a brilliant and principled thinker.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.